Computer.
We are recording.
Welcome everybody to Zen Talk number 4. Thanks for joining us on this beautiful day in Chicago. It is really hot.
A little toasty.
So, forgive me as I chew my Tic Tac. We are going to start with just kind of a thought for all of you. So yesterday, Todd was talking to one of his clients, and he mentioned to Todd that, well, what did he say? He said, I'm feeling
overwhelmed
by
anxious,
the amount of information that I'm receiving. He was like,
he's a seeker, and he's been reading a lot of books over the last 6 months, and he's, you know, a certain style of, you know, is about relationships, and he's been just really looking inward for a long time.
He's self-helping himself,
yeah,
to a place of discomfort. And we actually talked about that a little bit on today's podcast, the Money and Happiness podcast, that Todd's been using the word seek, and I push back a little bit on that word, because that word has become for some a challenge, because if we're constantly seeking and trying to access new information, then we're missing what's going on inside of us. So what we wanted to share is that if you are ever feeling like you're getting too much input from us, from books, from friends, from your
YouTube videos, however you get your information,
church, whoever is giving you information on how to better yourself, take an input cleanse.
Actually, it says input fast right here, sweetheart.
And I like cleanse. That's, yeah, that's, I fast is fine.
This is from out of Daniel Laporte, some lady.
It is, but it was brought up because it was in her book, but that's not, she didn't create this. This is kind of like a...
I created it. No. You created it.
No, I didn't. No.
Who created it?
The universe created it. The universe said,
the universe created everything.
If you need an input cleanse, it's okay. And the reason why that's important is because if you feel like, oh my gosh, there's so much information coming at me, then you're doing yourself a disservice by not stopping, letting it go for a while. That could be a day, that could be a week, that could be a month, that could be 3 months.
So here's my example.
Okay.
I do a lot of work with men, and I am on a Good Men Project. I am part of something called Mankind Project. There's a lot of healthy masculinity input that I've received for a long time. And if I read one more blog where they talk about healthy masculinity, vulnerability, and all this other stuff, I think I'm going to go crazy.
Go vomit somewhere?
I'm going to go vomit somewhere. Mm-hmm. Because so basically what I need is I need a break. So what I've been doing lately is you kind of choose your teacher depending on who's serving you at the time. And like Spirituality and Health is a magazine that Kathy and I read a lot. And mindfulness and meditation, like I've been hearing this so long, I need a different teacher. So as of right now, my different teacher is Tim Ferriss, who's actually driving me a little nuts right now by not what he says, but how he says it. But he is all about figuring out what certain people do and kind of mimicking what these successful people do. Like what are their rituals? Like what, and it's all about success versus, you know, mindfulness and all that. So I've kind of like went from this side of the pendulum over back to the practical, like tell me how to get ready for bed, or what's a good morning ritual to start the day out right. Like I want to hear that stuff instead of just allow everything to be.
Well, and I'll take it a step further and say, don't even listen to that. Quit listening to other people. Quit seeking teachers. What's going on in you right now? And so, you know, we were kind of laughing that basically we're saying you can even stop listening to our podcast for a while or not show up for a Zen talk if you're like, because what Todd's saying is this teaching was getting too much, so I went to this teaching. And I'm saying input fast. Stop seeking. Not forever, maybe just for today. But what I think is most important with all of this is how our knowledge serves our practice. And if you can't hear yourself, mm-hmm. then this knowledge is just knowledge. If you don't know how you feel about how you feel about how you feel, you don't need any more knowledge. And my suggestion is just occasionally stop. And I just want to share a very brief story is that a couple of years ago, I was working with a teacher and it got very challenging with this person. I'd been working with her for many, many years. And it got very challenging where I could tell it was time that we not work together anymore, but it was hard to split. And eventually I had to, and Todd and I both got pushed to that point. And so what I did, because I felt so, is I just stopped reading things. I stopped watching TED Talks. I didn't say to myself, none of this matters. I didn't throw it all out. I just said, I'm going to take a break. And it was essential. And I didn't sit and meditate. I just lived.
And when you're doing that, you're creating space for other things to
yes.
come into your world.
Yes.
Because because one thing I do is like, no, I got to read my whatever. I need to read my Wayne Dyer book, even though I really don't want to be reading it.
Right. It becomes an have to.
Yeah. It becomes something that I feel like I should be doing as opposed to something I want to do. I just, in this Tim Ferriss book, this guy was talking about meditation and all that. And not Tim Ferriss, but somebody who was interviewing, he said, you know, if you think that a good meditation practice for you every day is 5 minutes, do it for 3 minutes, because you always want to do it. You don't want to like begrudgingly get to that 5 minutes. You want to like leave wanting more.
Feeling successful.
Feeling
like you did. And so you don't have to do this input fast or this input cleanse. You don't have, you know, this is not a direction, like do this. This is if you have a day where you're like, none of this means anything to me. Right now, what Kathy's saying isn't resonating. What this book is saying isn't resonating. What Todd's example, then just walk away for a little bit. And that's okay. You haven't ditched yourself. You haven't ditched self-help. You haven't ditched self-awareness or Zen parenting. You're taking a break. And I'm saying that because I don't feel like anyone said that to me. What people said to me was, oh my gosh, you're not going to do this anymore. And, oh, you don't believe in this anymore. And I was like, oh my gosh, just let me relax and live and like see what it feels like to not constantly be seeking more information. And so I just recommend that.
Well, and there's days when I'm feeling most days I'm feeling inspired to like grow and evolve and learn about myself and all that. And some days I'm completely uninspired mm-hmm. where all I want to do is veg out in front of the TV and do all the things that I think are a waste of time. But sometimes it feels good to waste your time.
And because it's not a waste of time.
Exactly.
And it's not always about, and again, this is, you know, Todd's points are well taken, but it's not always about, it's either wasting time or seeking. There's an in-between place too, where you're just living, you're going to your kid's game or you're socializing or you're reading a book and you're not trying to get something from it except that experience. You're taking a bath because you just want to take a bath, not because it's the next thing on the list to do. And I think that summer, one of the suggestions that Todd and I were discussing for his client, which we have both experienced too, is, you know, if you're like, okay, then if I'm doing an input fast and I'm not listening to all these things all the time for a day or two, what do I do? We like children's books. Mm. Read some kid books. I hope many of you have read Wonder already. By R.J. Palacio. That movie's coming out this fall. Mm. It's a beautiful book about a fifth grader and other fifth graders and how they respond to a child who has facial deformities. And there's another book we love that's called The One and Only Ivan. And it's about this gorilla who's kept captive and his experience. And it's a kid's book. It's like a, you know, tween book, and it's beautiful. And we read it with our girls, you know, like at night. The other one I suggest is called, it's Edward Tulane. What is the real title?
No idea.
It's about a little rabbit who it's by Kate Camillo and who like adventures all over the world and has different owners.
But even those books are wonderful. I think Wonder is like probably one of my top five favorite books of all time, but there's even teachable lessons in there. And if you like, there are times when you don't want to have any teachable lessons. So maybe your thing is a murder mystery or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, sure, sure,
you know
sure,
what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah, like if you're like, I don't want to read a kid's book. And the reason I say kid's book, Todd's right, is because I think that it's not about gathering a lesson, but there's this baseline thing in kid books where it's just about goodness. It's not about how to be good. It's not about what to say to be good. There's this, in a really good kid's book, there's this inherent soul level human understanding that's not about learning, but about resonating. And so to Todd's point, if you're like, I don't even want to resonate, I don't want any of it. Yeah. And, read something fun. Watch Law and Order.
If you like murder mysteries, one of my best friends wrote a book called Summit Lake, and it honestly is a really good thriller.
Yeah, right? It's good. Yeah.
And we actually had him on the podcast a year ago when the book came out. So it's called Summit Lake by Charlie Donnelly. But anyways, so that's our teaching piece. That's
so if you feel like for a day you need to go on an input cleanse, or for a week, or for a part of the summer, whatever, do it. And know it's okay. You're not leaving behind your seeking. You're not leaving behind your learning. You're not dropping the ball on your kids. You're just being, because you've got to have some time to integrate things you learn. You know, that's kind of my, you know.
Well, and like the whole, like, you know, because I got Wayne Dyer's voice in my head. I got your voice in my head. I got Eckhart Tolle's voice in my head. I got Tim Ferriss.
Do you want me to talk into your head again?
Sometimes you just don't, you want to let things settle to when those voices kind of slowly dissipate and you're left with your own voice. Because there's so many times where I'm like, okay, what should I do here? What did I learn? How do I apply what I read in that book or what I watched on that YouTube thing? And there's an opportunity to forget about all your teachers and, you know, just figure it out.
Get down to the true teacher.
Because I have a feeling there's a lot of seekers in Zen Team
Zen. Of course. That's why we're sharing this, is because you guys are probably like us, where you're like, what's the, you know, it's like our Team Zen page, which I hope you're all on Facebook. It's like, you know, what's the new book? What's the best podcast? And we're like that too. That's our passion, right? But then occasionally you just kind of set it down and then you pick it back up. Maybe the next day, maybe a week later, it's okay to not be inspired every single second. Just like we're not enlightened every single second. Just like we're not awake every single second.
And when you do feel uninspired, there's this kind of like fearful part of me that percolates. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God, I'm uninspired.
Wrong? Yeah.
What's wrong? Am I never going to get it back? And just be comfortable with that feeling if you get it, because I get it a lot.
Non-attached to that feeling of inspiration, allow it to be something magical and grace-filled rather than something you're owed and that you have to find. Like if you let go for a little bit, it'll come back in its own way.
So, let go and let God.
That's right.
That's a Wayne Dyer quote.
Yeah.
Right? Or
yeah.
Maybe somebody else.
Yeah.
So
okay, questions.
I have questions here, but I think it's a lot more fun to have somebody live ask a question. And I know not everybody has their camera on, but is there somebody who wants to ask a question that is live on this call right now? If you do, raise your hand and I'll unmute you. And I'm hoping somebody has something.
They maybe came to listen.
No, I got a feeling there's some questions out there.
Well, why don't we start with one and then maybe someone will have a question.
All right.
Todd puts pressure.
I love putting pressure.
There's
on
no
people.
Pressure. You guys can just
there's
come
pressure.
And listen. You don't have
Lots
to do anything.
You have to do everything.
If I had to show up for a talk, or if I didn't have to, but if I was showing up for a talk, I just want to know I can chill and listen. And if someone's like, you've got to ask a question, then I may not come back.
This is the yin and the yang. Or is what some people say the yang.
The yin and yang.
Are you a yonger or a yang?
Oh, it depends on the audience. Sometimes I just say yang.
Just say yang.
All right. Okay.
It's kind of like when Rusty in Vacation says Aunt Edna instead of Aunt
totally.
Edna.
But that's a thing where you live in the country. Some people say aunt or auntie or aunt, you know.
I don't know. I'm more of an aunt Ruth versus an aunt
We
Ruth.
Grew up in Chicago. That's how people in Chicago say it.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Very good. Here we go. Now, Amanda is on the call. I don't know if it's the same Amanda.
Okay.
And I can't see her because she has
That's
her camera
a,
off.
Which is over.
I'm just explaining. My husband was previously married for 4 years. He has no children with his ex-wife. When is a good time to tell our children, 6.5 and 3.5, that their father was previously married? We want our children to hear this from us rather than other family members or friends. It's not something we want to hide from them until later in life. Yet we are still are not sure when or how we should bring it up. So let me summarize that. Two kids. Amanda's husband was previously married. When is a good time to tell our 6.5 and 3-year-old that their father was previously married? What do you think?
Well, I think with anything, like it can be about this example or anything that we want our children to understand about our history. Is the more normal the conversation, the better. Meaning I wouldn't want Amanda or anyone else to sit down with kids and say, okay, we're going to sit at the table. Now I have this big news I'm going to share, because the energy of that gives the kids a feeling that there's something about this that isn't quite right, or there's an anxiety around it.
But you don't say it while you're watching TV either, do you?
Well, but it can be it can be weaved into a conversation without it being dramatic. That's what we always talk about when we talk about sexuality with our kids, is the whole idea of, now we're going to sit down and I'm going to communicate with you about this really difficult thing. Everybody's on edge and they really can't even hear because the anxiety is clouding their ears. So instead, it's, again, there's some information I don't have from Amanda, like, is this person still in your life in some way? This ex, like, is she a friend of the family? Is she someone who lives cross country and there's not good relationship, or what's the connection? Because it could be very easy, if she gets along with everybody, to have a picture of, you know, your husband and this woman and say, you know, do you know who this is? This is actually someone that your dad was married to when he was very young. And the kids will be like, what? And you'll be like, yeah, and her name is this. And, you know, here, you know, kind of explain it.
But there's a 6.5 and a 3.5. Those are two separate conversations, right? Because they have two.
Why?
I don't know. There's two different stages of development.
But what does development have to do with understanding that there was a person that your significant other was married to at one time?
I don't know.
Like, it's not a sexuality talk. It's a, I'm just kind of a bluntly honest person, not in a harmful way, but what's the secret? Like, why is it something that we don't think they should know? Like, the deeper question is, why do we think it's an anxiety provoking situation? Why do we think that they won't be able to handle it? Because there's nothing about it to be embarrassed of, you know, that someone had a previous relationship. There's nothing about it to be ashamed of. It just was something, it's a part of my dad's history.
Well, and the energy that you, that Amanda and her husband bring to it, to your point, is if you're like all kind of jacked up, then they're going to feel the jacked upness. Whereas if you're a little more confident yet cool about it.
And that's really the key, is Amanda, for you and your spouse, is how do we feel about this? And what's our clarity about this history? Is this something we never talk about? Is this something we want to avoid? Or is this just kind of a normalcy in our relationship? Because if it's a normalcy, then we share it with our children in that way. There's nothing to be ashamed of. And them as children, they shouldn't be ashamed. There's nothing to be ashamed of that their father was previously married. It is, this is part of being human. These are experiences we have. We don't arrive at 35 or 40 with some perfect history. We have a story. And a lot of times that story can help us teach our children or engage our children in conversations about, you know, what a healthy relationship looks like, or mistakes. I don't even know if I want to call it a mistake, but challenges we've had in the past with relationships and how we can help them understand.
Well, and it makes you feel more normal. Like, you know, when kids are little kids, they think their parents are perfect, mm-hmm. until they figure out that we're just a bunch of grown up kids struggling and trying the best that we can. And it's important that you convey that information to them, saying, yeah, mommy and daddy aren't perfect. And we have, you know, we were young once and we made mistakes when we were younger. We make mistakes when we're grown ups. And, you know, because I just remember for a long time thinking my parents were perfect. And then whatever that event happened, you're like, oh, my God, my mom is just some lady who's trying her best to help guide me through this life.
Well, she's another human like me,
yeah.
You know, and that it even is, even in telling the story about our history, it's not all mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not because this relationship didn't work out doesn't mean, oh, it was this horrible mistake in my life. It just was a piece of my life. It was something, because what I will say for the opposite is there's no perfect age where you're like, now is when I tell them. You can gradually work it in where it becomes a natural conversation. So when they do get to their tween and teen years, it's so integrated in who they are that there's no issue. There will be an issue if you wait a long time and then you decide, okay, now you're 12, I'm going to tell you this. They're going to be like, okay, how do I process this? And the very bottom line is, I believe that within reason, we share our lives with our children. And when I say within reason, I don't mean we sit them down and say, oh, we're having trouble with money.
There's some discernment.
Yeah, there's discernment and developmentally appropriate conversation. But for the most part, life is... You know, our children, if we don't give them language for it, they energetically feel it. Mm-hmm. So we might as well just share to the best of our ability who we are and what we feel. And again, to Todd's point, with discernment, where we're not dumping it on them. This is not about them solving it or making us feel better about it. It's the normalcy of life. You know, like, you know, I was just, you know, you guys know that my dad passed away a couple weeks ago, and I was with my girls, and I went to see my mom a couple days ago, and I pulled up where my parents live, and right when I pulled up into the parking spot, I started to cry. And I just said to them, you know, and they kind of get uncomfortable, as children do when their parents are upset. I said, this is just a work in progress for me, girls. I'm just, you know, sometimes sadness comes up, and that's what happens. And I finished, you know, I let that happen, and then we moved on. There's no big discussion. There's no big problem. That just is. And so, you know, that's like my most personal example of the last couple of days. But I think the more we try and make a perfect, you know, we try and create a perfect discussion or try and formulate it in a way that kind of manipulates the situation, that's when it becomes, you know, just be you.
All right. Next question. Who wants to ask a question? Who's the lucky one? Anybody? Look at everybody. Nobody? Nobody? I do have more questions here, but I would much rather interact. So if you, all right.
Or, you know what, you guys, you do not have to ask a question, but there is a chat off to the side.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that, guys. How do I get that chat off to the side?
I don't know, but I think they can do it.
Yeah.
Exit full screen, maybe?
Exit full screen, and then chat.
Click on chat. Chat.
There it is. So if you want to type something, you don't have to ask a question, but if you want to type something, we're happy to answer it that way.
Good call, sweetie.
So yeah.
Good
so
call. Okay. So as we are moving along, question number two. This I think is from Millie, who couldn't make it today. We told a story about how we were playing the board game Life.
Uh-huh.
And in Life you get married and you get kids, and our middle daughter, Cameron, wanted to get married
children.
And have children, mm-hmm. and she never landed on that specific spot on the board. So she played the whole game without ever getting any children, and she was really disappointed, which I think is kind of funny, because for me, you don't want children, you want to win the game, but she wanted children.
She's taking it literally.
Yes. But my youngest daughter got children, and she was kind of rubbing it in her face a little bit.
She's like, gosh, I'm so glad I got children mm-hmm. while playing this game.
Right. So that was the setup. So so let's see. This is what she says. Kathy, you told me this story about kids playing the game of Life, and her one daughter saying the next morning how happy she was to have had twins. Clearly, to go, the sister was disappointed not having any kids.
So down a little bit, because I can't read it. Because I can't hear.
Oh, okay. So you called her on it by just asking, what was your reason for saying that? Mm-hmm. That's what you said to Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
I know you didn't make her apologize. Did you make her apologize?
No.
Your having asked the question was already making her think about her actions. What I'd like to know is if you would follow up with her later, when everyone is back to feeling good, to ask why she said it. Would you follow up to check in and see if there's some underlying reason for the desire to hurt the sister's feelings or to make her sister feel small?
Mm-hmm.
Let me answer first,
because
okay. It's going to be shorter than your answer.
Okay.
I would not bring it up, because what Cameron exemplified is that she has an ego like the rest of us, and Skylar had an ego and was trying to make her sister feel bad, and that's a very normal thing for siblings to do to one another. Now, and it's not that big of a deal. Now, if she like hit her in the face, that would be something, but for something small as this, I would just kind of let it go. I wouldn't bring it up after, like address it in the moment. And then let it go, because it's very normal behavior. So you don't want to, I don't know how I would have that conversation without making her feel guilty or shameful. So I would just avoid it.
Yeah. Well, I think let's switch it around, because what Millie's saying and what Todd was saying was our daughter said this thing to make the other daughter feel bad. And let's switch it around. And instead of say she was trying to make her feel bad, what was she really trying to feel? Our youngest daughter said that because she wanted to feel powerful. So it wasn't necessarily about hurting somebody. It was about her feeling better about herself. Now, the way she felt better about herself is she did make somebody else, maybe not, or her intention was maybe to make someone else smaller, so she felt more powerful. But the reason why I switched that around is because then we're not looking at our children saying, you just want everyone to feel bad. Your intention is to make someone feel bad. Really, Skylar's intention was to make herself feel good. And just that small difference can help us talk to them in a certain way. Because what Millie points out is that when Skylar said, you know, oh, I'm so glad I had kids in that game last night, I just stopped her and said, now, what is your intention behind saying that? Kind of with a smile, not an angry scolding, but like, what is your intention behind saying that? She's like, what? And I'm like, well, you know that your sister really was sad that she didn't have kids. So when you say that, was your intention to really point that out for yourself or to point that out to Cameron, you know, that she didn't have kids? And she was like, oh, I don't. You know, there wasn't a resolution, like a full circle, like, okay, now kumbaya, we all get it. But my intention was just to point out, what was your intention? And is that really the best choice right now in the moment? And also, as an observer, I see what you're doing. Not, I see what you're doing, therefore you're grounded. But I'm cognizant of what's happening here.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think a lot of kids think their parents are idiots.
Yeah.
And it's important to remind them, like, we get it.
Right.
We see what's going on.
And that's our, you know, as parents, our job is not to control our kids, okay? This is like, you know, Zen Parenting 101, right? Our job is to be, they are mirrors for us and we are mirrors for them. We're all human beings growing up in the same home. And our job is to see each other and recognize each other and point things out to each other, not in a way where we win and there's one leader. It's not about it being a game, but that's what we're supposed to do, is reflect back, you know, when they hurt us, oh, that hurt me. Or when you recognize they're hurting someone else, or can you, you know, we would say then, do you see how you're making someone else feel? Or they, and our children do that to us too. Like, you know, our children say things like, you're not being fair to me, or I feel you don't hear me. And that's our opportunity to say, okay, what am I missing? And so that's what we do for each other. This isn't my kid needs to get their act together, I can't believe they did it. That's what we do. I think that there's the acceptance of allowing our kids to have those moments, because that's how they learn that there's other ways to feel good about yourself rather than put someone else down. You don't know that until you do it. And once you do it, if you have somebody like a parent who's not angry about it and who can just point it out and say, you know, there's other ways, then they don't have to be ashamed of it. They can just recognize that's not the way to go.
Well, and it's normal. Like, I think of like little kid, toddlers, like they stick everything in their mouth. That's how they figure out what's going on. And then when they turn four, they end up taking the toy out of their sister's hand. And like that's how they learn. They don't learn from hearing us lecture them. They learn of the experience of doing something, quote unquote, negative, hitting, biting, stealing from their sister.
Being unkind.
Mm-hmm. That's how they learn. And then it's our job just to kind of gently guide them a little bit through those experiences.
And say there's other ways. You know, there are, what you were trying to do in that moment was feel powerful. When you said, I have kids, you don't, in the game of life. There's nothing wrong with wanting to feel that sense of power. But there's ways to do that without putting another person down. There's ways to feel good about what you're doing without having to make everyone else feel small. And that's what we want our kids to learn, not to shame them for wanting to feel strong and powerful, because we do want that, right? But you know how you feel strong and powerful? You be of service to other people. You say kind things. You give compliments. You know, offer help. You support. That's a way to feel strong and powerful. But they have to practice the other ways too, to know that it doesn't sustain. So
I had something happen to me at the grocery store this morning.
What happened?
I was checking out, and you know, the baggers are sometimes kids who have some
special needs.
And this beautiful young man was bagging the groceries, but the checkout lady,
was it Chris?
No, it wasn't Chris. Okay. I love Chris.
He's awesome.
Chris is awesome. There was another guy named William.
Okay.
But the checkout lady was being really mean to him.
Yeah.
And it's a lady who, she never stands up. She's got blonde hair, whatever. And I kind of let it go because I had a lot of stuff in a little cart. And it was not easy to get everything in this little cart. So I should have had a bigger cart. And this kid was trying his best. And this woman, first of all, like, you know, level three being unkind. And then she escalated to like level five or six. And I didn't even think about it. I reacted. I said, hold on. Hold on, everybody, just hold on. And I said, this is not that big of a deal. We'll figure this out. I think you're being really unkind towards this young man.
Did you really?
Yes. And I didn't even think about it. I just reacted. I was like, and, you know, I don't know if the kid was glad that I was defending his honor or if he was mad, but I said, I think we're being really, she's like, well, I'm not being unkind. I'm like, well, from my perspective, you are. And I just think that we all need to kind of treat each other with a little bit of respect.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious. And what was weird is I thought she would get mad at me, but she remained so nice to me while I was kind of reminding her that she was being unkind towards this young man, her coworker.
Interesting.
And then she did lighten it up a little bit, but she like, no, I'm not being mean. And I think I don't know what she was thinking, but I feel like she was maybe trying to say like, this is the only way he'll listen.
Correct.
By being direct and loud. And she may be correct, but from my vantage point, it was disrespectful. So.
Well, from where you were, it was uncomfortable. Way that she was.
And the reason it was uncomfortable is because I feel like, yeah, just you can do things. We could parent our kids a million different ways. You can remind your kid to clean their room every day for the rest of your life without having to yell. You can continue to directly yet gently remind them. Like, yelling doesn't really work that much.
No.
Well, in the short run, it does.
It does. That's the thing.
In the long run, you give them bags to carry.
The thing about the yelling is that, first of all, it's been modeled to us. We've seen it. It's modeled to us in our own lives. We see it on TV. We have a lot of people who reinforce it. There's a normalization of yelling at your children where you think the belief system is, this is the only way they'll get something done. Now, the truth is, sometimes you can yell at your kid and they will jump to it because they are afraid. And so you have scared them enough that they will get done what you need them to get done. The question always is, in the long run, did they learn something? Did they actually integrate some kind of learning, or did they learn to be afraid? And if they learn to be afraid, then you have damaged your relationship with your kid, where they now don't necessarily fully trust, they just know to be afraid. And so then maybe you're like, well, I like it like that, because then they'll do what I say. But then when they're struggling, or when there's an issue with sex, or when there's an issue with drugs, or when they have a friend who's in trouble, will they come to you, or are they afraid? Or do you feel like you have a connection that can grow where when they become adults, you have a wonderful peer kind of relationship? That may not happen either. There may be more of a like, I just got to get through this conversation with my mom and then I need to get away. What do you want with your kids? Now, what's the alternative? Discussion, conversation, repetition, understanding, normalization.
Empathy.
Yes, consequences sometimes. And when I say consequences, I don't mean discipline like, you know, you're going to go sit in a corner. But, you know, if you're not using the phone in the way that was agreed upon in our contract and the way we discussed, then, you can't have the phone.
We can't do this until you do that.
Right. So it's not about that there's nothing. It's not that you can't do anything about it. But the more that you can have an understanding and not just a do it because I said so, or do it because I yelled at you, does not help the relationship. It breaks down communication, and it also can't sustain through the teen years. You know, the teen years, they're bigger than you. And I don't mean that means they're going to hurt you. I just mean that go sit in a corner doesn't work.
Yeah. Oh, you're saying like physically they get bigger.
Bigger, and they can also, they have keys or sometimes, and they can walk out the door, and what you want to help develop in them. You
can't reverse locks on their bedroom like we used to do when they were two.
There's a lot of things we do when they're young that's controlling.
We didn't reverse locks.
No, I know.
I do have a friend that reversed locks on his kids' doors. Yeah. And I said, what do you mean you reverse locks? And basically you literally lock the kid in. Crazy. Can I show what you bought and put on our side door? Because I already used it once today.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
With who?
With Skylar.
Oh, good. I tend to buy things for the house that have words on them because I like to have things around me that remind me of what I want to do.
So not everybody can, a lot of people listen to this, but
Liz is excited.
There is, she just put this up yesterday and it's about an 8x22 wooden board, and on the board it says, we can do hard things.
Wait, Liz, do you have this? Liz went away, but I bet she's got one too.
That's hilarious.
I love it. Oh, I love it.
That's hilarious. So,
Liz.
And it's so funny because I was at the hardware store this morning. I did a lot this morning.
Okay. Yeah, you had a day.
Putting something up on our treehouse for our daughter, and we needed to go to the hardware store. And she accidentally stole something. Like, there's, like, you know, at the checkout counter, there's always things
right,
there.
Right, you hold it.
She walked out, and we just pulled into our driveway. She's like, oh, my God, I still have this. So I'm like, oh, we'll just turn around, and we'll go return it. And but she's like, Dad, you're going to do this for me, right? I'm like, well, I didn't. I was, like, messing with her. I'm like, and she's nine. She's 9 years old. I said, well, I didn't steal it, so I don't need to bring it back in. You're the one that's going to jail.
Well, and you're joking with her.
Well, I said it, but I was joking with her.
Oh, my God.
I said, you're the one going
don't
to jail.
Don't do that.
No, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
You were joking with her.
I was totally joking with her, but I did say, I'm not the one going to jail. She's like, Dad, will you just please hold this and then tell her that I did this accidentally? I said, well, I'm not the one who did it. And I reminded her, I said, what did Mom put on the door? We can do hard things. This is a very uncomfortable thing for her to do. And the other thing I've been telling our kids and ourselves is to own it.
Own it, yeah.
Own it. You took this out. You accidentally stole it. You might go to jail. But then but then she won't be that mad.
Well,
hold on, I'm not done. So then, so I said, I'll make a deal. Either I will hold it and you talk to the lady, or you hold it and I'll talk to the lady. And we kind of turned the corner, and the lady was like staring right at us. And she had a big smile on her face, and Skylar was still holding it. And she said, I accidentally took this. She put it in the basket, and she walked right back out. So she did the whole thing
awesome. Good
by
for
herself.
Her. Good for her.
So, but if I didn't have that sign to remind me, I may have been like, oh,
you
I'll
You may
just,
have said
I'll,
she'll go to jail?
Yeah, she'll just go to jail. So anyways.
So Todd, I mean, I wasn't there, and maybe she really was afraid, but he uses humor a lot, so I'm hoping Skylar got the gist of the humor. But for those of you who are like, how would I say it, it's such a normal accident. Kids pick up things all the time, just like we do. I have put things in my cart underneath and walked out of the grocery store and had, like, you know, some LaCroix underneath my cart, and I didn't steal it. I just didn't recognize it was there. Now, what do I need to do? I need to go back in and let them know and purchase it or return it. And so the language for our kids is not, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that, but it happens all the time. And the key, the normalization is it happens all the time. And what the next step is you go back and you, like Todd said, you own it.
Mm.
It's not a big deal. It's what you do. And it kind of goes back to Amanda's question at the beginning about, you know, how do I tell someone this big, you know, it's not really a secret, but this big story, how do I tell them? Normalize it, integrate it, just do it. Don't make a big deal about it, or else it feels like a big deal. And I love that you did that, though. I mean, not the jail part, but I love the sign.
No, and I think the sign is, it's interesting that it showed up because of you in our lives at this time, because I kind of, when you and I think if we are going to make an error, it's always on the side of love and compassion. If it doesn't feel right, then you don't do it. And I just feel like this sign kind of balances out because, you know, we have a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old. There's a lot of hard things that they're going to have to do mm-hmm. that aren't going to feel comfortable.
Right.
Yet this is a good reminder to do it.
The thought that because something's uncomfortable, it's wrong, is something we need to question. Discomfort is a part of life. And discomfort does not mean this is a problem, I need to get out of it. Because you know what we do with discomfort? We go have a cigarette. We go drink. We go gossip. We go use a vice so we don't feel that discomfort anymore. Anytime someone says to me, well, you know, my days are so hard, I have to get home and then I have that glass of wine, it is, and there's nothing wrong with wine, I drink wine too, but when it is, I'm so uncomfortable, I don't want to feel it, so I'm going to numb it out.
And you use it as an escape.
Exactly. And that's kind of that fine line, you know, like where it's not about being shaming, but it's why am I uncomfortable with this discomfort? Because within this discomfort is where all the learning happens. This is where I figure out how to rise to my best self. This is where I realize that grieving is okay. This is where I realize I can return something to a store when
and she's going to use that experience. Yeah. And next time she feels like intimidated to do something, I think that this will be a stepping stone for her.
Yes, it, absolutely. And you know, something I do sometimes, I wake up and I realize I have a bunch of things I have to do that I don't like to do. I'm not good at calling people like in the cold calling way, or like having a meeting with someone I haven't talked to before. I don't like those things. They make me uncomfortable. So I do them first. I don't wait all day. I get it done.
Big rocks first.
Yeah, like, you know, that's not because I'm so organized. That's because I'm trying to lessen the discomfort. I'm trying to get through it and be done with it rather than hold on to the discomfort all day long and then have to deal with it, or maybe push it off again so that I'm uncomfortable all night.
Well, and one phrase I like to say is that we don't have to be comfortable to be okay.
Absolutely. There's no such thing. Part of life is discomfort.
And I also think as adults, I think sometimes I feel like being an adult is easier than being a kid. And what I mean by that is we can elect whether or not to do something or not. Mm-hmm. If a kid doesn't want to go to school, odds are his butt or her butt is going to have to go to school regardless.
They have to. Mm-hmm.
Now you could say, well, we have to go to work. Yeah, I guess that's true. But I just feel like as adults, we have more independence on avoiding certain situations. Mm-hmm. And kids, you know, it's kind of a sucky thing to be a kid when it comes to certain things.
And they don't know what they don't know. Yeah. Meaning when you're a kid, you just know these are the things you do and you don't question it until you're older. Well, that's not true. Some kids do. But, you know, a lot of times they don't even consider not going to school something that is a possibility. It's kind of like breathing for them, you know, but they kind of discover it when they're older. But I also want to say that we can do hard things is on the back door because of what Todd said. There's a lot of things that because our girls are getting to an age where they do have to walk through discomfort, I want them every time they walk out the door to know they can do it. Mm-hmm. Now, what else do they see in their bathroom right when they get out of the shower? It says, life is good. In the family room right over there above our door, it says, you belong here.
Right there it says, lean into joy. So Kathy has kind of scattered these messages throughout her house.
Yeah.
And it's pretty awesome.
So yeah, so the messages are not always about difficulty and discomfort. A lot of them are about ease. You know, you balance. A lot of it is about, you know, like what they see every time they get out of the shower is life is good. And does that mean life is easy? No, but it's inherently good. And then it's also when we're walking out the door and, you know, like, you know, my oldest daughter just joined this really difficult team, this sports team, and it's hard and she has to practice in the heat. And
she woke up this morning and worked out. She'd never done this before. She because her body's growing. She's 14. So when she has a chance to sleep in, she'll sleep into 10:30. And she had lacrosse practice yesterday and she woke up, worked out in the basement with my weights, which she never does.
Yeah, it's weird.
And then she went for a run.
Wow.
So I don't know if the coach got planted a seed saying, listen, you guys got to step up or what, but I was shocked.
And that is hard for her, but she can do it. We all can. This isn't how to avoid hard things. It's how do we do hard things in an emotionally intelligent and conscious way. You know, it's not about just bulldozing through. It's about how do we do it in a way that honors ourselves and other people, and how do we trust? Because, you know, I feel good when I get those hard things done. That's when I feel like,
oh yeah,
you know, can we go out to lunch today?
No.
Oh, why?
What time is it?
It's time.
No, I got to call at 1:30. Wah, wah.
So I did hard things this morning and I was hoping to go out to lunch, but we can't do it.
No.
But maybe I'll go out to lunch by myself.
That's possible. Or we could do a quick lunch. But anyway, so it's 12:44. So we're going to close up shop here today. We got another one next week. I don't remember when. Do you remember?
No, but we have one every week this month.
And
did I say that right?
Yeah.
Every week this month, yeah.
And I just, on behalf of Kathy, I just want to express gratitude for everybody who's on Team Zen. Mm-hmm. But I do want to recognize the people that are on the call today, Sean and Peggy and Liz and Michael's iPhone, even though I don't know if it's Michael, and Kimmy and Kelly and Amy Rose and Amanda and Allison and good old 843-471-1765.
Yes.
Whoever that
someone's
might be.
Phone number, because you can call in. There's many ways to be on Team Zen.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Todd is always kind of the pusher of ask questions and do this. You are welcome to just show up and listen.
Right, but you should ask questions.
And do you be you.
Because it's more fun when they ask
for questions. For you.
Right.
But for them, remember there's many people.
Everything is for me.
No.
everybody's opinion is from their perspective.
Okay.
You're too all everybody's feelings.
Right.
Let's not worry about everybody's feelings. Let's worry about my feelings.
You do that and I'll do mine. And then so the next call that we have, you guys are welcome to email us a question. You can write it on the Teams End page. You can, this chat that's available, you can always write it the day of.
Or when we get on the call, just say, yeah, have a question, we'll click over to, yeah, you or whatever. So
yeah, because we want to be, we're here for you. We don't really have an agenda.
And feedback. Let me know.
Yeah.
We want to improve. We want to get better.
Always.
Always. Adios.
All right, guys.
Peace.
Have a good day. Love
Peace
you all.
Peace out.